Three, two, one.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the No Normal Show brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Ezra Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity Inclusion at Revive, and I'm joined by co-host Stephanie Weirwill, Executive Vice President of Integrated Marketing. I don't know why I was stumbling over that, but hi, Stephanie.
Hello, Des. Titles are always fun to say. Words, lots of words.
We love a multisyllabic word. Yes. And we're also joined by co-host Chris Wickline, Senior Vice President of Strategy at Revive. Hi, Chris.
Hello. It is so nice to be back together.
It is. And you have just returned from the great state of Texas in Austin for the 28th Healthcare Marketing and Physician Strategy Summit. Tell us all about it. What went down? What did you learn?
Oh man, it's always a great event, right? It's a great event for people to connect with peers, to see what's happening in the industry, and just to share good things. So, and again, remember, coming out of COVID, it's just so nice to be IRL with people.
It really is. It's,
yeah,
we've missed that, just that camaraderie and even just like being together, whether it's to share ideas or just get to know each other better. It's just always nice to be IRL.
Yeah, for sure. So some really, really good stuff. And I think, you know, as we were talking amongst some of the folks that also went to the conference with me of the Revive team, some of the things that we saw, I think, you know, well, there's one thing new that's going to really, really excite Stephanie, our queen of generative AI and everything AI. There's a lot of conversation around AI. So I'll start with there. Start with that. Lots of questions, lots of curiosity. I attended one particular session where it was on generative AI. And, you know, there was a query of the attendees, a simple raise your hand. You know, who's played with it? Who's played with it for work? Who's played with it? You know, who sees the possibility of actually using it in work? Those sorts of things. And hands were up everywhere. It was just people are really trying to figure this out.
I love that. I love that so much. And I think, you know, anecdotally, we've seen that among some of our health system friends and health system clients, where they're not waiting and seeing, they're not monitoring, they are in it, they're playing, they're asking, hey, can we use it here and here? And, you know, whether it's ChatGPT for text or Midjourney for visuals or thinking big, like how do we help this make our patient experience, you know, more efficient? It's so interesting. Were there any specific examples, Chris, that folks mentioned in terms of how health systems or healthcare organizations are experimenting with it?
Well, I think clearly one of the places, and this will also light up Stephanie Weirwill, is all around content, right? I mean, I think people are really seeing how this can accelerate. And, you know, content is one of the things that is, you know, can be very difficult to execute. And it's required for any level of engagement, any level of optimizing digital spend. And I think people are seeing the real potential that can have to advance their digital capabilities, patient engagement activities, et cetera.
It's so exciting. I've said for a long time, just put that chip in my brain and let's all just become a assisted knowledge worker who has more intelligence and more ability to write, to think, to create, to ideate. It's a brave new world.
It is.
Oh man, I'm ready for my chip insertion. My bags are packed. I'm ready to go.
Well, I'm not ready for the chip insertion, but I am being the skeptic. I'm not a skeptic of this. I've been playing too personally, and I think it's really, you know, there's so much potential. But I do think, Stephanie, to your point, all of the questions, people are asking a lot of questions. How can I use this? How should I use this? What are the guidelines? You know, and we're seeing it every day. We've talked about some of those things before. So, you know, I suspect like in any environment, there's a continuum and people fall all along it in terms of how they're thinking about, you know, what we can really do with this in our world.
All right. We've been dreaming about the pie in the sky with generative AI. What else is something that we can tangibly take away from this that you learned while you were there?
So, you know, I mean, before I worked at Revive, I worked in the CRM space, but there is so much more now happening around a few things. It's really around data-driven marketing and personalization. So it is everything from, you know, MarTech, lots around using CRM, but not just using CRM. CRM is out there. CRM has been out there for a while. I think my hypothesis is that we were all caught, or many of us were caught, unprepared when COVID hit, and we didn't have effective ways to engage some of our consumers. That's part of it, but I also think it's just the natural course of evolution. But what's interesting is while some of these CRM platforms have taken an enterprise twist, I think what's happening is a lot of marketers are not maybe getting some of their needs met, and or learning how to get their needs met within the broader enterprise utility or capability of CRM. So you're seeing data, data vendors who are supplementing data. You're seeing other sub vendors who are helping you use CRM more effectively. There's just so much there.
When you say needs not being met, are you referring to the fact that there needs to be so many tech stacks to get what you're actually looking for? Or you're referring to something different?
I think it's viewed as an enterprise-wide level capability, and marketing is probably not at the top of the list of why a lot of these organizations got CRM in the first place, right? So, you know, making sure that, you know, they have a seat at the table and that their voice is also, and their needs are also being met as CRM capabilities are being expanded, developed, et cetera.
Any other items before we start to jump into our topic for today?
I'd say just one more thing, again, use cases, moving further down in patient engagement and loyalty, which warms my heart. It's not just about CRM for acquiring patients. It's about really how do we meaningfully engage consumers, which we've talked about a lot about. We talked a lot about that during COVID and, you know, periodically, you know, throughout our time on the show. So I think, you know, there are advances being made. And I'd just also say one other thing, you know, Revive did some research last fall around MarCom structures and design and what's on the mind of health systems and data analytics, insight, how you use it to do technology, more technology-driven marketing. It was also a forefront of that. So it's just, our world is definitely evolving. I think one comment I've always loved is we overestimate the impact of change in the short term and underestimate it in the long term. Well, data-driven marketing is here, guys.
We're here. And hopefully it'll start to bring in more, as you mentioned, it's not just about, you know, sending out reminders, but it's also just engaging in that day-to-day. And just, I know that it pulls from data to understand like what you're experiencing, what you're searching to send you relevant content. But it's, I don't know. I'm always ready for someone to understand what I need rather than me trying to make a phone call to do it, because I clearly am not making those appointments.
Well, I'm having I'll call it an Oprah moment. You know, when Oprah restates something that really hit her. So Chris, it's a statement that I want to put up on my wall is, you know, the idea that we tend to overestimate the changes coming in the short term and underestimate it in the long term. I think that is huge with where we are right now from a technology standpoint. There's all this buzz out there. You know, it is generative AI, but it's also the metaverse, and it's, you know, robots are coming to town, and it's, you know, data driven and all these things. And we're overhyped for today, but underhyped for the next 10 years. But to your point, it's for things like CRM, you know, those are the today things. So I just wanted to restate how big of a note that is.
Word.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's jump into our topic for today. We're talking about what, you know, some of the regional hospitals and health systems are experiencing, some of the smaller ones where there might be some competition coming from larger entities coming into their areas, where there might be some purchases, some mergers and acquisitions. We just want to talk, because there's a number of our clients that are experiencing this, and just kind of sharing some of the three strategies that we've come across in supporting the needs of some of these smaller regional institutions. So with that, I know the first one is thinking about don't let your leads fall. And, you know, what does that mean? Because I know we talk about lead generation, you hear more so a lot of that from a marketing standpoint, from perhaps on a consumer side. But what does that look like on the healthcare side, and how we might share some insights with clients on what they should be doing to make sure that those leads don't fall?
Well, first of all, I'm super excited about this discussion because we do work with a lot of regional health systems, and we work with some rural health systems as well. And I think the work of making these systems strong is meaningful, right? This is meaningful to our populations and our country, really. So it's near and dear to my heart. Don't let our leads fall. I mean, I think it just gets to the fact that when you're in a smaller area, right, and you may not be in a metro area, you're in a mid-sized community, a regional community, it really is about you cannot afford to waste any customer interaction or consumer interaction that's coming to you. You need to maximize that opportunity. You need to embrace that individual. You need to understand their needs, and you need to kind of nurture that. You just can't, you don't have an endless population to keep putting in at the top of funnel. This kind of goes to just what we were talking about as it relates to CRM. You need to continue that consumer engagement continue the care.
I'll just add, I think it's been an important buzzword for many years, and an important conversation around, you know, patient leakage and what does a leaky funnel look like. And it's much more complex, right? Which is everything from, you know, properly managing referrals to billing and how that's done. But just the one very maybe even simpler way to shore it up, as Chris is mentioning, is if we have existing patients who maybe they're coming to us for primary care or women's health or whatever it is, how are we making sure that they're coming back and they're coming back to their next annual appointment? And if we have someone who's, you know, who's been set up for an appointment and then that appointment gets rescheduled, how do we make sure that we do it in a timely manner so they don't run away? I mean, these are very simple sounding things, but they're actually quite complex from a technology standpoint to accomplish when that tech infrastructure is not set up properly. So it often gets put on the back burner, whether it's CRM gets put on the back burner or having a easy online scheduling mechanism or having a call center that's doing outbound calls when they need to. Those things are like, they're table stakes in other industries. They're table stakes in retail. But for healthcare, it's still a serious issue. And it's, I think, the number one priority if you need short-term revenue.
And I know we know that so much of the emphasis has been on having paid media in the market, especially traditional market. But to your point, Stephanie, around what role does having more of this personalized, the CRM, the really getting in there with the regular appointment setup, you know, how important that is compared to, you know, just getting a TV spot on the air as far as continuing building and then continuing that relationships with those in your community, especially since you are a huge part of that community most often.
Yeah. And I would love to share a little story, which I don't think I've shared it before on here, but we've talked a lot about new entrants and primary care entrants and whatnot, but there's one called Forward that I like to casually, you know, kind of sign up for these folks and see what the experience is like. And it turned out Forward is a primary care new entrant. And I kind of like poked around on the website, did a little contact form fill, that kind of thing. Turns out they're not in my market, but do you know they called me within 15 minutes of me going through sort of like an HRA? They called me on my cell phone within 15 minutes, outbound call, and asked me, you know, who I was, what I needed, what I was looking for, what I needed in my health. A health system has never done that, to my knowledge. So there's the bar.
Wow. That's awesome. I mean, that's awesome to hear. I mean, it really is.
I mean, from that customer experience standpoint, like just jumping right on, like there's other entities to your point, Stephanie, where they're just like readily available to take all your money for you to buy their products. But for something that's more of a service oriented, the bar is set. So speaking of the next stage for these smaller regionals and thinking about where they sit within their communities and that they should be looking at being community first and different opportunities to serve as well as engage with current and potential consumers. What are some of your thoughts around the role that being so hyper local plays in the relationship with your consumers?
I'll jump in. I mean, I think, you know, a couple of things. It means you need to suit up and show up, right? And of course, you know, smaller systems do this well, right? But oftentimes from a marketing point of view, when we think, hey, we want to reach and engage consumers, you know, what are the standard things we do? We've got like a standard list. We're like, oh, we got a campaign and we should do a digital ad and we should do search ad and we should do social. But the reality is, and those are all good things, but those are all kind of arrows in our, you know, arrows that we have to, what am I trying to say? Arrows in our quiver? Yes, thank you.
Yes. I don't know what a quiver is, but that's the saying.
Arrows in our quiver. But the reality is that the media that we have to reach people is much more limited, right? And where we can reach folks is in their community, in their daily activities, in very different ways. And honestly, to me, I think that's an advantage that many larger health systems in metro areas don't have as readily available to them. But Stephanie, this is really kind of, this is your jam. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are.
I mean, you really hit it. It's basically how differentiation is the key here, of course, in building a brand and building a business. And so many markets, it depends on the market, but a larger market, of course, may have an AMC or two if it's very large, and the surrounding areas, multiple community health systems. And, you know, once you get more rural, you know, perhaps the community health system is the only one, the only thing nearby. So the question of differentiation becomes where AMCs are typically playing in the science and innovation field. You may have faith-based health systems playing more in that route, more around compassionate care. And so for a community, how do you ensure that they're coming to you and not driving the hour, hour and a half, 45 minutes, whatever it is, 2 hours in some cases to get to an AMC? And it is by being top of mind, having the emotional connection, because you're likely not going to play up the science like the AMC down the road. So that emotional connection, which means staying top of mind in people's living moments, which you already are in many cases if you have, you know, if you're the largest employer in town and everyone is connected somehow already. But this is where I think sponsorships get really interesting. And I'm not talking about let's just throw our logo on the local baseball team. You know, it's more of what are those actual sponsorships where you're helping people live healthy lives. And, you know, perhaps you're having community outreach programs and you're involved in the local school, bonus points if you have a clinic, right? And you're actually helping. And I think our parent company, Weber, calls this moving from storytelling to story doing, which is what are your brand acts? What are the works that you're doing in the community that is far more beneficial than just sitting there and telling patient story after patient story after patient story? So to me, that's where community health systems can really, really, really shine and keep top of mind over the science and the innovation that might be shared an hour down the road.
Yeah. And on top of that, especially as you mentioned, probably being the largest employer in your area, you know, there's this automatic, you know, brand ambassador, which of course any hospital, any health system can say, but it hits different when you're in a smaller community, because these are the folks that you're running across on a regular basis. You're running into them at the grocery store, you know, at the restaurant Friday night after work. And, you know, they're perhaps reminding you of, you know, an appointment that you missed, or you're saying, hey, oh my God, I need to talk to you. I'm so glad I saw you because I'm having this issue with this or whatever. You know, I think each of us have lived in small communities throughout our lives. And I'm reminded of a time, and this actually has to do more with a bank. This was a local nonprofit organization. There was something that came up and we really needed to get something figured out from a budget standpoint, but we had such a close relationship with our local bank, with the banker, that we were able to get it like knocked out and figured out much sooner, much faster than you would if you were working with this larger entity. So there's so much to be even just said anecdotally about those intimate relationships that you have, not only with the organization, but with the people that you just kind of run across, especially given the fact that we know that people trust people. They don't trust an organization. They don't trust a brand and entity. They trust the people that work there and the relationships that they've built, that they've perhaps had their entire lives, that go a long way in continuing that relationship development.
Chris, I have a controversial question for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, so if I'm a smaller or regional or maybe even local health system and I'm budget constrained, I don't have a lot of marketing dollars, I want to be meaningful to my community, I want to reflect the community, how do I think about A, my target audience area and size, but also how do I think about reflecting the needs of the community as a whole when maybe one side of the, you know, town is very different than the other side of the town from a culture or demographic standpoint?
So, but I think that's your benefit. You know your community best, right? And I think that's what we see. The ties to community are really deep. You know them best. So I think that's where it's like, it's not just what do we say, but where do we say it? And where do we say it in ways that are meaningful and authentic to the various different audiences? Because I think there's also a recognition that, look, perceptions of brand in small communities for hospitals lives on forever. They are hard to change. They are hard to move, right? So I think you have to acknowledge where you're at and you have to try and move those individual audiences. You know, older folks may think differently than younger folks. Older folks may have experiences that go back generations. Younger people, you have the opportunity to kind of influence those a little bit differently. And I think, I don't know if I'm answering your question right, but I think you need to look at your different segment of consumers. You need to acknowledge perhaps where they see you and then engage them in a way that's a little bit more meaningful. So I'm just going to use an example. How do you show up at the senior center? How do you show up at the senior center in a way that connects and builds trust? Not just assuming, hey, these are older folks in my community who are going to have to come to me. You know, they don't have a choice. Whereas, you know, your younger families, where are those moments where younger folks are present with their families and doing, you know, daily activities, and where do you show up, right? In those ways versus, hey, I'm going to do a digital ad or I'm going to do a social ad or a social post.
You brought up something very important, Chris, around generations and that, you know, the stories get passed down from generation to generation. You mentioned the difference between perhaps how older consumers think differently than maybe younger consumers. I'll throw in a little story time around the perceptions around the experience of folks of color throughout history. So I'm knowing here in the Nashville area where in the South, there have been certain hospitals where you were not allowed to go, that care was not delivered to you. Or if there was a desegregation of that, where you were now allowed to go to these institutions, that the treatment that you received, the patient experience was just awful, that you were not cared for, and that perhaps they have done a few things to fix that through the years, but there's still that history that stays with you. So for example, I know just from my personal experience and stories that I've heard, there's been certain AMCs that we just won't go to because we feel like we're not going to get the care, we're not going to get the attention that those with perhaps a lighter skin tone may get. And that's another example of perceptions that you will need to get over and figure out that way and build relationships, build back up, and you'll have to actually prove it. Because it's one thing to say, but I know that a lot of institutions have done a lot of great work towards this, but it's you have to go directly into those communities to make sure that that's known. And if there's a way to find and demonstrate that the care is better, even better. But yeah, there's so much to unpack with just the history of treatment of different folks in this country and in this region, especially.
It's such a powerful point, Des. Thank you for sharing. I think that's so important, and it makes me think. Back to, you know, Chris, your point about knowing your community, and then Des, your point about what various audiences need and may not be getting elsewhere. How could a smaller or local health system really stand up and say, you know, we're here for people of color, and here's what this means. And, you know, our staff is representative. And I think that's a really powerful business strategy if your market is a diverse market.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's a hill, of course, to get over. But if you're, especially if you're in an area where there is a lot of new influx of folks coming in, you know, there's an opportunity there to build new relationships, build and new stories, tell new stories, new histories. But it is definitely a lot to overcome, but you do need to take the time to even just speak to the communities to understand where you sit and the pipeline of employees, making sure that there is more representation, and all of the different ways you can demonstrate that. But yeah, it's something that each should be thinking about, and also getting the pulse on their own communities to understand where they actually stand.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think that cannot be overemphasized. I think sometimes it's just human nature just to have an idea of how our brands are perceived, right? And, you know, particularly in smaller communities, we can put our hands up in the air and say, well, it doesn't matter what we do. We're going to be perceived that same way, right? But I think sometimes it's in the hearing. It's in the hearing where that is. And then to your point, Stephanie, how do we differentiate ourselves, right? How do we need to shift that perception? And how do we differentiate ourselves from others where consumers may choose to go? And, you know, a great example is, hey, I'll come to you if I have an emergency, but man, if the chips are down, I'm going to go somewhere else. I mean, I think that's common. That's a common challenge that some smaller health systems have. And the question, to your point, Stephanie, some of these smaller health systems are never going to be able to position themselves as having or being at the forefront of care as perhaps an AMC 3 hours away. That said, how do you be the connector? How do you connect that consumer? And particularly if you have a system further away with a bigger hospital that can serve their needs, how are you connecting them in a way that is, consistent with a similar experience, the same brand, making it easy to get appointments, making it easy to, you know, to transfer, to get the care you need, to get the medical records back so that when that person comes home, you know how to deal with them. So there's many things that you can do, even if you're not in a position, you know, to be able to serve every need of the community.
And it could even show up in smaller ways, like we talked about trust before, and that people trust people, and that getting more of your clinicians, your providers, your physicians, your nurses, whomever, out in the community, building their own relationships in order to build up, but having them physically out in the community, finding various ways to stand them up as thought leaders, partnering with different organizations with their own conversations around health. I don't know, but there's just so many different ways, even just from that community engagement, where it's perhaps more person-to-person contact with those that are employees of the organization, to build those relationships. All right. So key takeaways here are, you know, not letting your leads fall, making sure that you're paying attention because the stakes are high, especially if you're in a smaller area where there is a lot of competition that may be coming in, and the media dollars from entities perhaps an hour to 3 hours away are coming for you, that you should be remaining community first, tapping into who you're already existing with, and that you know your market way better than anyone else that's going to be coming in. And then that brand perception is key, is important. You need to understand it and not just make assumptions based off of what you've been hearing, perhaps anecdotally, but really diving in to understand like where you sit and how you can change perceptions if need be.
Any other thoughts?
I do have an ad. So, you know, when you retweet and then you delete your retweet and then you retweet and add a comment, that's what I'm doing here. okay. So on the brand perception piece, I'm thinking about Revive. Has shared a good bit of thought leadership over the last few years around a post-health system brand and what that looks like. And so, you know, we've talked a little bit about how, in general, at a high level, you know, perhaps the AMCs are leaning more towards innovation and science, perhaps the community folks are leaning more towards community, and so on and so forth. But let's take it, you know, a step further, which is to build a post-health system brand, you have to stand for something bigger than yourself and stand for something bigger than, you know, even what you bring to the market. So examples that, you know, our post-health system brand pieces talk about is, you know, Nike stands up for, you know, making it count and just do it, and kind of this bigger sense of just going out there and getting it. Whole Foods stands for a healthy lifestyle. Disney stands for the magic of childhood, right? Like, that's bigger than their products. And so just to push forward on, so you stand for the community. Great. And then what? What does your community stand for? you know, what is that bigger why? And it's got to be more than to make the community healthier. So I just wanted to note that because I think it's not as simple as community versus science.
No. And I mean, I'm glad you put that ad out there, Stephanie, because I think it's critical. It's about, you know, for many of these types of health systems and hospitals, it's about, you know, being vital to the survival of communities. Because, you know, you need healthcare in a community in order to sustain a community long term. And so it's a critical link to being able to maintain a healthy economic and community environment.
Perhaps even taking on the personality of what you're known for. I don't know, but we will wrap this up. So Stephanie, Chris, thanks so much for being here. And for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining in. If there's something you want us to cover or have any other thoughts on this subject that we've been discussing, shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. And make sure you share the show with your friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. All of that would be appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and we'll see you next time. 3.